The theater. The theater.
Bring out Louis.
Theater. Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater. Theater.
Well, hello, dear.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hello. Fancy meeting you guys here.
Every time you say hello, dear, I think of the Oneaters.
Oh, yeah.
Reason,
the Oneaters.
Which we talked about last night.
We did, yes.
While having a schmig.
Yeah.
I don't smoke cigarettes.
No.
But I've never had a cigarette in my life. But we've been watching a lot of stuff together recently. What we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Last night. But we also went and saw The Marvels last week.
We saw The Marvels.
So fucking good, too.
And we had a really good fucking time. Like, we were talking pre-show that it's just been pissed on by, you know, the Marvel fans. It's the worst debut of any Marvel film ever. And it's a shame. Could I nitpick the movie and make it better, or make suggestions that would have made it better? Perhaps.
No.
perhaps. But
I could say that about any Marvel movie.
Sure,
right?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And the reason we see them is because they're stupid. And that's
right.
What I like.
And they're fun, and they're feel good, and for the most part.
Superheroes,
and cats.
I think. And cats. There was a lot of criticism because Secret Wars was supposed to build this up, and they were supposed to be linked, the Marvels and
Secret Invasion.
Wars.
You mean.
Secret Invasion, my bad. And they weren't, because Secret Invasion was poor. But Marvels, those three women were fucking great together. They were hilarious. They were awesome. They kicked ass, and I had a blast. I had a blast being with you guys, too. But, you know, we were also in an audience
night.
That we were in a fairly decent-sized house that really dug it and was with it. And I don't know, man. I don't know.
Well, and everyone I've talked to amongst my friends that are Marvel people, everyone fucking loved it.
Yeah, for sure.
Everyone immediately loved this movie. So,
yeah. I don't know.
Back off, haters.
My hot take is that they should have spent an entire act of the film on the planet where they can only sing.
Yeah, they kind of get
like,
there. They kind of get
good.
There and leave.
They're
there
about 5 minutes. I want about 25 minutes, maybe more.
Right.
And it's that kind of stuff. And like even like, you know, okay, I don't spoilers for the Marvels. No, I won't spoil anything. But there is a planet where people sing. And because we are a theater podcast and we are theater nerds, like we automatically were like, yes, I'm in. This is great. I think a lot of people shut off at that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
I want to like implore you to like ride through it and enjoy it and just fucking have fun. Go see the Marvels.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Go to give it some box office love.
Yeah.
Speaking of theater.
Yeah.
Welcome to Theater Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm Jay Bailey Bertram.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
That's right. And each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And this week is a CJ's pick. Siege, this is your final pick of the year. Mm-hmm. We kind of have forgotten about that in our last few episodes, that like these are our final days of this season, of season mm-hmm. four. Why'd you pick this?
I
that sounded meaner than I meant it to. Why'd you pick this?
Line reading.
What did you pick?
Favorite game ever.
What did you pick and why?
I picked the 1954 film,
film.
White Christmas. Hmm. And I picked it just because I was just taking advantage of having the last pick of the year and the episodes falling right after Thanksgiving. And this is a show that I didn't come to until like, I don't know, 2017. But since then, I usually drunkenly watch it at least once before Christmas. And then I just wanted to share it with y'all.
Yeah.
That's all. Like, why? Because I always have a good time watching heartfelt movies at home, but I have an even better time watching them with my friends. So,
yeah,
that was all.
Yeah,
just wanted to capitalize on the holidays.
We had a great time.
Yeah,
we did. We
good
did.
Snacks.
We ate some good snackums.
Oh my god,
good company.
They were great.
Scott, what's your history with White Christmas?
Well, not a whole lot. I remember seeing it as a kid, but it wasn't a seasonal regular thing. I'm pretty sure that it was like a TBS Turner Classic Movie flick that would come up,
of course,
during the holidays. But
right.
You know, so I knew all the songs, I remember all the numbers and that sort of thing, but I certainly hadn't sat down and watched it in, I couldn't tell you when. So it, right. that was kind of cool. I always like going back and watching, not esoteric, but more random stuff from the past, especially the 50s, because as you see pop culture evolving and becoming its own entity, and we can talk more about that later. It's always cool to watch those old 50s flicks, but yeah, otherwise not too much. What about you, Bale?
I always sort of associated this movie with the thing they put on in December after the concert had been done in choir class, and they were like, we don't know what else to do. Let's watch White Christmas.
Kids, right? Sit down, watch this movie for the 50th time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So I saw it a lot as a kid. It was not something my family really cared about or had any, you know, nostalgia for or anything. But I think my parents like Bing Crosby a good deal.
Yes,
like as
sure.
a concept.
My mom, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I really like Danny Kaye.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of forget that he's in this.
Sure.
Because I really like Court Jester, and I really like... other things he has done. I always think of it kind of with a bit of fondness, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But then I saw the theater show, the actual stage show.
Which I've never seen.
It's, never seen it.
I've seen it at like 3 or 4 different regional theaters.
Wow, regional theaters, huh?
Yeah, that's where they do it.
Huh.
Because it's a big budget show. If you're going to do it, you got to do the movie on stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's same with Singing in the Rain on stage. It's like, if you're going to do it, you kind of just have to do it. Because if you do a half-assed version, people are sort of like, great, you sang the songs. And right. that's sort of how it feels, I think, if a community theater does it. Now, I think I have seen it at a community theater, but they had some money, you know, and they made it. They did the sets and they did the costumes and everything. Oh, wait, a bit of context I forgot about. I did perform Sisters in the 3rd or 4th grade. I think it was maybe 4th grade. No, it had to be 3rd grade. My 3rd grade talent show, my friend Michael Wagner and I, shout out to Michael Wagner, his mother, who actually just got like inducted into some like huge, like they, oh, they just named the gymnasium after her. Because
oh,
she
wow.
A preschool and kindergarten gym teacher there for like 46 years or something.
Holy shit.
And just retired. And so, yeah. So she was my gym teacher as a little kid. And it was his mother. And so she choreographed it exactly from the movie, to the point that when we were watching it last night, I was like, oh my God, I remember the stuff. Right? And, which was crazy. But so I have that bit of nostalgia for it too. I always forget about. But... oh, and the year before, 2 sisters had performed it. That was the joke. Mm. I always forget that bit of the story.
That's cute.
The Woswick sisters had performed it the year before, and so it was like we were making fun of them, but we kind of weren't. But we were, yeah. So I, rewatching it last night, was just had the regional theater shit playing through my brain, and I was just like, I don't like this. I know I'm not going to enjoy it. And I... really enjoyed watching it with you guys.
Yeah, that was the point. Like,
and that was it.
I don't know that
you
it's
know
a great
what I mean?
Movie.
Like, yeah. We had a lot of fun. I think I have some hot takes and I have some things to say, but for the most part, like, it's a lot of Irving Berlin songs.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll get into the minstrel aspect of all of it, but like, besides that, like,
yeah,
it's not Holiday Inn, and we thank you for that.
Yes.
Exactly.
One thing I was talking about off mic was, it's funny watching movies like this, like, I would dare say Hook might be the same thing. Like, movies that I put in during the holidays, and it's when I'm wandering around my apartment, probably drinking, wrapping presents, all that shit. And it's a nostalgia thing, and it's about the songs and blah, 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 or the moments with Hook. But then if I actually sat down and watched it with friends, I was like, huh, this movie isn't as great as I remembered.
Right.
I
mean, so,
Yeah. Yeah, the nostalgia thing is trippy with this, because I've been on my nostalgia rant for a while now, but
yeah,
doing some more research. So this movie is a nostalgia fuck. This is 1954. Almost a decade past World War II.
Except for the parents of the boomers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the greatest generation, quote unquote.
Yeah.
We're a decade past World War II, which was, I don't know if I've ever wrapped my head around how big that was and how altering of society that was. But then you're doing Irving Berlin songs, and Irving Berlin at this point is well past his prime. These are, it's not like he's the hot guy, cranking out, the hits on the radio.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so the fact that it is, and that you have Bing Crosby in it, who at this point is now
playing a 26-year-old.
He's 50 something and he's in the twilight of his career, this is kind of a little bit of a comeback, although he hadn't really disappeared, but it's definitely, we're down on the downward slope. So it's an interesting thing how the nostalgia plays after so long. Like, I wonder what it would be like to watch this with my parents, who both would have been children and very much, an audience for this movie at that time. Yeah.
It reminds me weirdly of, this is such a fucking terrible reference, but it's, I know people like this, and this is the sort of one-to-one facsimile, whatever. Chris Cooper in American Beauty watches like really old black and white military comedies.
Right.
That's like his entertainment, or like docs, or like things that are like very serious, whatever. But like, he's laughing at things that no one would get, but somebody who was like alive at the time in the army.
Right.
And I think, I just know so many people like that who watch this movie with those eyes a bit, who were children when it came out. I say people, boomers, older people, who were children when it came out, who are like, this is, who also see it nostalgically. I know it was for their parents.
Right.
But they have a nostalgia for it too. Yeah. So it's very interesting.
That Bing Crosby White Christmas song, of course, everyone knew that song probably way before they ever saw the movie, especially people our age. Mm-hmm. But like, that played in my house multiple times a year before Christmas because of my mom. So like, it's a nostalgia. That song by itself is a nostalgic thing for me.
Well, we talked about this last night, but that was a very popular song that Bing Crosby had already sang like on TV and things like that before this movie.
And it already been in a movie. It had already won an Oscar for best song from a movie for Holiday Inn, And we also mentioned last night, I always associated the song with Bing Crosby's Christmas special from the 70s that got replayed all through my childhood, that had him singing White Christmas with the big orchestra and all that, but also had the famous duet of Little Drummer Boy with him and David Bowie somehow.
Right.
And it's fucking great. I mean, their voices just hit perfectly together,
And things like that have survived more because there is no official soundtrack of this film. You can listen to... I think they've done since maybe in the last few years, like a transfer of it that you can listen to, but there is no actual recording besides on film of Rosemary Clooney and Bing singing together.
Hmm. Right.
Like, they never recorded a cast album or anything like that.
Hmm. That's interesting.
So like, anytime you listen to a vinyl or anything, it's usually just Bing and Rosemary singing songs by themselves.
Right.
And sometimes I think I was reading about this, but I'll have to find it. But they were talking about there's some recording where somebody like put them together and it sounds like trash.
No.
But like, it's not real. They weren't in the same room. Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Kind of interesting. So what, you want to break it down for us, CJ?
I would love to.
Okay, what's it about?
CJ's Breakdown.
Singers and former USO performers Bob and Phil are roped in with sister act Betty and Judy to perform a Christmas show in rural Vermont. Turns out the failing venue is being run by their retired World War II commander, General Ray Waverly, who's just dying to get back in the foxholes. What better excuse to way overspend on their budget and produce an absurdly bloated holiday show that saves the venue and makes dad-aged Bing Crosby and daughter-aged Rosemary Clooney fall in love all over again. Yeah, yeah. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Macrimum.
Macrimum.
Yeah, that's what it's about. So
my favorite part of last night was the movie was over and Bailey turned to both of us and was like, "So, what was that about?
What is it about? What is it about?" Let's ask it right now. I want to know what is it about.
No, it's a really great question because I thought about that. I'm like, that's just my thing I try to do. You know, shortly after seeing something is kind of go, okay, what are the themes? What would I say the themes of this are? And all I can think of is money. It's just a cash grab in a lot of ways. Like, you know, let's get these great people together, do these cool numbers. And listen, the talent in this is fucking insane, aged or not. Like, Bing is fucking great. Danny Kaye is fucking great. You know, the women are fucking great. It's great. But it's kind of a bizarre thing with the general and saving it and trying to give. I mean, I guess it's about friendship. I think you could say it's about friendship and you know.
I'm hanging on, yeah.
To maybe a bit of duty. I'm pulling here. Duty. I'm not. Well, in that, you know, the characters that Bing and Danny Kaye play, you know, Danny Kaye's character saves Bing Crosby's life, and then he's forever indebted to him, apparently. But they create a musical act that becomes a huge success.
That's true.
But then they, you know, they feel like they owe something to their old, you know, commanding officer, the general, and you know,
for what?
For
being
cool,
their general,
for being their general.
Got it.
Hey man, you know when you find a good boss, and I've had some shitty bosses, but if you find a good boss that you know treats
you
well
and
you respect
their venue, their
save their
hotel?
Small Vermont farmhouse theater. Hotel in
no you're right
lodge.
I should do
yeah
that.
Yeah
no, I should do
you
that.
Should do that like right. Yeah you know like
I consider that,
like
I
if I were to save
no,
if I were to save CJ's life I would expect her to be my entertainment partner. And then if you know you ran into trouble or had severe PTSD and it felt a desire to go back into the army, Bailey, we would hold a benefit for you. I feel pretty sure.
To save your farmhouse.
You know,
stage.
At least we do, you know, a solid, you know, GoFundMe.
Great. This movie's great. Well, I also
Huge
mentioned
box
it,
office success, by the way.
Of course. I mentioned it last night too, though. Like last couple years, as like watching old timey movie musicals, and first one that comes to mind is Meet Me in St. Louis.
Louis, but sure.
Pardon me. I should know better. I did play Tootie in it when I was 9 years old.
Billy Bailey.
No, you're totally right, though. Meet Me in St. Louis. I was like, oh, I haven't seen that movie in forever, and Judy Garland sings that great Christmas song in it. Let's rewatch that movie. And the fucking plot line is bizarre. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
A lot of those were, you know, we brought up... our friend of the pod, Patrick Duffy, is rereading all the Pulitzer Prize novels and talking about the racism, but also just sort of the weirdness of that time period through the first half of the 20th century into the second half of the 20th century. And pop culture, as we know, it hadn't found itself at all.
Right.
And, you know, it was very much trapped in tradition and towing the line and very... you know, conservative in is to say the least.
Yeah.
Bailey, what do you think the themes of the movie are?
Well, see, the reason I ask is because I have no fucking clue.
No and earthly idea.
I haven't the foggiest. I'm watching this movie And after the sixth rehearsal that they've done or performance they've done for something, I'm like,
just
oh.
Just to show a full musical number.
Yeah, but that's yeah. it. It is a jukebox musical of Irving Berlin music that I said this last night. If we want to rate it as like an old nostalgia piece of Christmas feels and good songs. Yeah, I knew every song that played. Yeah, I was like, sure. Oh, yeah, I know that song. Oh, yeah, I know that song. Oh, of course, I know this song, right? Whether you forget they're in White Christmas or not, right? Like, I was like, isn't Count Your Blessings from Singing in the Rain? No, it's not. Okay. I get these two movies mixed up a lot. I don't know why. Just in my brain, they're kind
of
the same.
They both deal
movie.
With precipitation.
Except Singing in the Rain has a plot. And this
does.
One doesn't.
But it's kind of profound now. Just in terms of the transition from the silent era to the talking era.
Especially now that Babylon
of...
has yeah, come. You know, yeah. Babylon really tackles that, which I thought was cool. But I think if we compare it to jukebox musicals, the modern jukebox, there are a lot that succeed. There are a lot that completely fail because they are just, let's get to the next song by the person you like.
Sure, sure.
And then there are some that totally work, that use the songs very well. I would argue Moulin Rouge, not the stage show necessarily, but, you know, is like a really solid jukebox, right? This...
It really is. And just feels... to interject real quick, yeah. What Moulin Rouge does with those songs is those songs advance the story. And you said it last night, like everything just stops and they just do this song in White Christmas.
Right.
For sure.
And I get bored by that very quickly.
Sure.
And I think that's my hot take.
Yeah.
Is that
I hear a kitty in there.
Boring. Yeah, my cat really wants attention. I'm going to do it.
Not going to do it. It's a cat hole, so to speak, as opposed to a rabbit hole. If you give the cat attention right now, you're going down a hole of, now the cat's not going to let you
rabbit out. Hole, David Lindsay Abaire?
Yeah.
The really funny bit we had going last night was they keep talking about going on the Ed Harrison show, but the way they say it, they always drop the sin. It always sounds like they said Ed Harris every time.
Yes.
And every time we just got to a point where we're saying Ed Harris of the right stuff. Ed Harris of the Polo team. Ed Harris of Westworld.
The other funny bit in the movie is how many times they play the song Sisters.
Oh my God.
And Count Your Blessings. They play them both in the background and otherwise like 450 goddamn times. Like, we get it.
We should point out that the actor who did play Ed Harrison was Johnny Grant, who was famously the former unofficial mayor of Hollywood. He was the one that used to always oversee all the
Walk
of Fame reveals and stuff
like
that.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, he passed away a few years ago, but I ran into him one time. He was very nice, but I didn't know he was in this until last night. So,
well, like we said, this was a huge success. It was a $2 million budget.
Damn.
Highest grossing.
In the 50s.
Yeah. But, that was the thing, right? It was like, you're right. I mean, in terms of... what that is now,
inflation, right?
Inflation and such. I don't know, but let's see. Adjusted for inflation, that would be. Oh, it doesn't say, but it says it made $12 million.
Damn.
Which adjusted for inflation is $137 million.
Wow. All right.
Which, for people at a time where no one was seeing movies in the way, you know, obviously now is we get it. It's a different time. I could have gone down this whole rabbit hole of like, obviously at the time people weren't seeing movies because, and I just don't want to, everyone knows and we're smarter than that.
It was also the beginning of the end of the studio system as they knew it, because within a decade, they're just dropping money on, you know, crappy
these
musicals,
huge,
like Sound of Music.
You know, Oklahoma and.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get my Sound of Music dig in, but I did.
It's
fine. Carrie Underwood.
No. How dare the both of you.
This was the first movie to be filmed in VistaVision, which is kind of
cool. You mentioned that.
Which, it's Technicolor using VistaVision.
It was a format, as I understand it, as he pushes his nose up. It used a bigger portion of the negative so that it created a bigger image for projection, which is, you know, it's why you want to see shit in 70 millimeter and IMAX.
It makes the colors like really rich and luminous. And they said, especially on the big screen, it like really pops. I just had this weird memory all of a sudden. I went to a party one time at a house like in Larchmont, maybe. Mm-hmm. And there in the backyard, they had a giant inflatable screen that they were projecting White Christmas on because it was a Christmas party. Hot. Yeah. And I remember it looking really good. And last night, I remember being like, this looks really good. Now, I know it was a digital transfer, so they've done some, I'm sure, some restoration to
it.
But it's so vivid, and, like, Rosemary Clooney's eyes are, like, piercing blue and shit. It's kind of incredible.
Yeah,
and I did notice that they would put Bing especially always had some sort of blue accent,
right,
whether it was his ascot or his jacket. That would
There's
make
a lot
his,
of ascots in this movie,
right?
But that would make his eyes pop. Like he's like those baby blues were intense for sure.
Yeah, pretty incredible.
I wanted to discuss. I don't know if we need to save this when we talk about performance reviews.
Yeah,
but my MVP of this movie is Mary Wicks.
Yes. From Sister Act.
From Hunchback of Notre Dame. Like, what a character actress for fucking decades.
And really the epitome of it. She's got like, you know, she's in multiple scenes, but she probably only has three or four moments. But she steps up to the plate and she fucking, she delivers her one-liner like a motherfucker and then gets out.
Fantastic.
Like, it's great. Like, just, that's the reason to watch a lot of these old movies too, is those old character actors who
seeing them young. It's fun.
Yeah. Seeing them young and, you know, seeing them do like, just, you know, like I remember, you know, seeing her, like she did an episode of MASH. Mm-hmm. I remember where she played like one of the superior, nurses, you know, the officer nurse. And, it was great. So like that kind of stuff's really fun.
Yeah. She was fucking delightful. She was probably my favorite in this. The other one that Bailey brought up, I don't know what Bailey's doing right now.
Yeah. What's happening, buddy? Everything okay?
Someone knocked on my door.
Oh.
And I'm checking it out, but I can still hear you guys.
Okay.
You can still see me, right?
Yes.
Keep talking. I'm with you.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Something that kind of blew my mind last night that Bailey brought up was that one of the uncredited choreographers for this is fucking Bob Fosse.
Yeah. Yeah,
and Vera Allen, she was known for her dancing more than other stuff. She's just fucking incredible. I mean, everyone at that time was a triple threat. Well, maybe not some cases.
Yeah.
But like everyone knew how to dance, but I felt like she must have done it more or her whole life or something, because she gets featured in so many long dance numbers. And I mean, the movie could have been a half hour shorter if you cut out like about 50 less like chorus reprises and dance breaks.
Sure.
But like she's so fucking good. Like when she's dancing on the bridge.
Yeah.
And like she's so good. And I tried to figure out who her partner was that danced with her a couple times when it wasn't Danny Kaye. And I just couldn't find him in the cast list.
Oh, yeah. We got to find out what that guy's name is. He was really great. You could tell he was just pure dancer.
Pure dancer
brought in. But, you know, but to give props to Danny Kaye, too, who was another one of those.
Yes.
That just, you know, when he's making fun in the choreography number we were talking about,
it's kind of
mocking modern dance. But all of those dancers were extraordinary with the modern stuff they were doing.
Yes.
And then he doing the mocking, slight mocking of it just by really using his face, but physically was absolutely nailing it. And you're like, God damn, that's not easy to do. I wonder how many hours were put into each of those numbers.
That'd be interesting to know.
Just how that
it had to be a
process.
Lot.
Yeah, right. But yeah,
and there were no like union rules at the time or anything, right? You know, so
no, they're
14 hours.
They
on
were
bar.
All under contract. It's like, you know, your call time is 5. We'll let you out at 5.
Yeah,
you're gonna have a cup of coffee and a steak. Get back out there.
We talked about a bit about this. But Fred Astaire was supposed to play the Danny Kaye role.
Right.
So at one point it was going to be kind of a reuniting of Holiday Inn.
Yes.
Which, by the way, is 12 years before this.
No shit. I didn't know it was that much older.
1942 is Holiday Inn.
Damn.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a long time ago. So it would have been sort of like they're back. You know, it's Meg Ryan and
Tom Hanks and coming back together, those team ups, you know, all the Crosby Hope movies, which are so great, which, you know, Bob Hope wasn't a singer dancer, so it would have been lame in it. But but Fred Astaire is even older and would have been even older looking than Danny Kaye. So you would have had two dudes in their 50s, you know, smooching on, you know, women half their age.
Well, and Astaire was retired and not really doing anything anymore, because they were supposed to shoot White Christmas, I think, pretty soon after Holiday, and it was supposed to be like a direct sequel.
And it just kept putting in pushed.
Right. So then that's when it gets sort of the rewrite and doesn't, you know, it's not a direct sequel. But then it was offered to Donald O'Connor, which is another reason I think I get them kind of confused.
They're on the same level there.
And he accepted, but I guess he got sick.
Oh, okay.
So then they went to Danny Kaye, off of Court Jester.
Yeah, it's great choice.
He's
delightful. He's just charming, you know, that he's just charming to watch and engaging.
Rosemary basically did it because she doesn't really dance, and you can kind of feel her awkwardness dancing in the movie.
Yeah.
But she took the part because she just always wanted to sing with Bing Crosby.
Aww.
She's lovely in it.
You know, half his age, and they're playing lovers, but it's, you know, it's good. Can we talk a bit about Vera Ellen and her singing?
Ooh, this was an interesting thing to find out last night.
So you're actually hearing, whenever she sings, you're actually hearing Trudy Stevens.
Mm-hmm. Who had a pretty good career, if I'm not mistaken, you know?
We should actually look up what she did, because I feel like she did a lot of really cool stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll find it. But she, there is one moment in the movie where she does sing. One single note.
Yeah.
And it's the word snow.
Uh-huh.
And it is a moment that if, you know, blink and you miss it kind of thing.
I never would have noticed it unless you had pointed it out.
But then I had read this fact right before the moment. Do you remember that? Like, I read it and told you guys, and then we were like, oh, it must be coming up because they're about to leave. Because it's when they leave, they disembark on the train in Vermont.
Yeah, they just have gotten off the train. Yeah.
They sang Snow like 4 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
And they're getting off the train, and it says, and they all sing Snow, like snow, 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 or something like that.
Yeah.
She's like the second or third note, and she's basically like, Snow. It's so funny.
It was.
It's really funny. Once you know it, it's really funny. Like,
never going to be able to unhear it.
Well, because any other time she sings, it's so gorgeous.
Yes, yes, yes.
And the timing of you finding out that information right as we get there, watching the movie, it's like, and so it stood out like a sore thumb.
But Vera Ellen rules. She, you know, she was the youngest Radio City Rockette ever at the time. She was 18 years old.
Wow.
Had been in a bunch of Broadway shows before, you know, doing this. She apparently was friends with Doris Day as a little girl, which is crazy. In Norwood, Ohio, which is a suburb of Cincinnati. And they used to carpool to dance classes together.
Jesus Christ.
It's crazy. It's just insane. Because they would have been like little girls in the like 20s or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
Yeah, pretty cool. Maybe 30s. I don't know. I don't know how time works.
Probably. There's no such thing. It's a construct.
You brought up Fosse already, right? Yeah.
Yes, I did. Yeah. The one last thing I want to say about her, too, that I thought she was so good, and to me it's just so clear how well-trained she was at dancing, like her movement is amazing. Like the way she uses her body is impressive, but the way that she sold herself facially, whether it was like to the camera, how she was looking at other people, how she spotted, like she danced from the top of her head to the bottom of her feet, and her face was part of it. And I just was, she was great. She was a lot of fun to watch.
The camera likes her anyway, but you're right, CJ. That's a really good, really astute observation because it, she is, she's playing, she's always leaning into the camera, and it's marvelous to watch.
She knew, it's almost like instinctually, she knew where the camera was set up and how to play the lens. So
that was, we talked about this last night. They're so interesting. There are like three or four moments in the movie where I'm like, and we talk, I know money was probably a thing and time was a thing and people's not wanting to do 1,000 takes of things. But there are a few takes where you're like, there had to be a better take of that. Right?
Yeah.
There's a moment where Danny Kaye throws Bing a, like a hairbrush or something. Mm-hmm. And Bing drops it.
After they'd just been doing a bit of tossing things back and forth to each other in their scene. Yeah.
Right. So I don't know if it's meant to be, if it's like that's the joke, or if it's sort of like now they're disconnected. You know,
I wonder if it was tied to the VistaVision, which would have been more expensive to shoot, certainly.
On film and all that. Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, we only got one take here.
Totally get that.
Make it work.
And I, you know, it's just so interesting. There was I'm trying to think of what the other ones were.
No, there were a few. There was a couple like where people just kind of bumped into each other,
or like kind of misspoke a line, but and it didn't feel natural. It felt kind of like, oh, I messed that up. I'm gonna, you know. And I'm interesting.
Yeah.
But there is a moment that is kind of cool. That it's cool that they left it in because no one probably noticed but Vera Ellen. But there's a moment during The Best Things Happen While You're Dancing where Vera turns and like twirls behind Danny Kaye while he's kneeling or something, and her foot catches his heel, but she recovers it like really quickly. And it's like almost seamless. Mm-hmm. And if you're not like, you know, a dancer, you wouldn't notice it. I didn't know it. I read about it. You know what I mean? I didn't catch it while we were watching it either, but it's just interesting.
Maybe they're trying to let you know it's live theater and shit happens.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There are a couple other things I just want to throw out there that are cool little tidbits. Do you mind?
Yeah.
Sisters, the number that I performed as a child, the Danny Kaye Bing Crosby version, is not in the script and was something they were doing on set for fun while it was being recorded with the women. They were doing it off stage, and the director who directed Casablanca, we should shout out Michael Curtis, saw them doing it, and people were laughing so hard at Bing and Danny that they were like, wait, we're putting this in the movie.
Right.
So they did. That's kind of cool.
Sock garters, everybody. Let's sock bring garters. Back sock garters.
I wear them. No, I
don't. They're fine.
And then Snow, the song Snow, was actually written for the musical Call Me Madam and had nothing to do with the winter. It was called Free. Every time they said snow, it was free. Free, 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 which is crazy. Not that that's how the song goes. Snow, 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 snow. But that's kind of an interesting tidbit. And then also the Holiday Inn and the Columbia Inn, the Waverly's Columbia Inn, you know what I'm talking about? Same place.
Oh, okay.
It's on the Paramount lot, and they just refurbished it for 12 years later.
I wonder if it just sat like that for 12 years or if they had to unpack shit.
Right. I wanted to bring up Michael Curtiz real quick, who's the director.
Yeah.
Who had an amazing, stunning, insanely eclectic career. He was clearly a studio director who just took his assignments and made his movies. But one of those movies was, which was just an assignment, was Casablanca, which, you know, is a masterpiece, and we've covered on this show. But The Adventures of Robin Hood, the 1938, the sort of big version,
the
Captain Blood, Mildred Pierce, he directed.
Right, the original.
Yeah.
He's not really, what's interesting about all these is that he's not really an auteur. He's like kind of a journeyman. Like he's doing a journeyman, these all.
Like, yeah. And
but they all end up being weirdly kind of classic. That's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah. And just how different it was. Last night while we were watching, I was like, I'm trying to see it. I'm trying to see Casablanca in here, yeah. Like the movement of the camera and that kind of thing, which again might have all been limited because of the tech they were using. They might have been very, very limited in terms of the time and money they could spend on that. But yeah, it's just a fascinating thing.
I do love the costuming and some of the set design in this. I think some of it is very obviously on the Paramount.
Sure.
But some of it, there was like specifically actually the set where they're all dressed up at this place and everything's kind of pink and CJ was like, it looks like
it's Victoria's
the Carousel
Secret. Club. Yes.
Yeah, carousel, and I was like, oh, it totally does. But it like it's like obviously, you know, 30 years before Victoria's Secret's a thing. But
right.
or more probably. But I loved that aesthetic. I think it's actually really cool. I think a lot of people love this movie for the aesthetics and
they were definitely using color as a tool, that's for sure.
For sure. And the costumer, Edith Head.
Oh, no shit.
was an 8-time Academy Award winner for
like
costume.
One of the biggest Academy Award winners ever.
That's right, including Sabrina, Roman Holiday.
Oh, wow. Shit, yeah.
And one of my favorite movies of all time, The Sting.
Oh, yeah. That was
the
one
costuming
of her last
in that
ones.
Is like
yeah. Forget about
tier.
It.
Yeah.
Well, I will say, though, with Sabrina and Roman Holiday, listen, I could dress Audrey Hepburn. Like, you want to talk about somebody who's easy to fucking even put a frock on her and it's going to look great. I'm just saying.
May I please bring up my favorite Easter egg in the whole movie?
Of course.
So it's my personal favorite song in the whole movie is Love, You Didn't Do Right By Me. Mm-hmm. And Rosemary Clooney sings it. And she has four handsome young backup dancers, and one of them is the original Bernardo from the West Side Story film. George, is it Chakiris?
Yeah, Chakiris.
Yeah, but this is like 7 years, I think, before West Side Story.
He looks like a baby. He looks just like a kid.
But I can't remember who told me that, but it's, I don't know. And he's uncredited and everything in the movie, too, and it's just crazy.
Humble brag, he follows me on Instagram. Anyway.
That's awesome.
Yeah, humble brag it all day long. Shit.
Here's a fun one, too. Not an Easter egg, but a interesting thing for our Star Trek The Next Generation fans. Tar, not Lydia Tar, but Lieutenant Tar. Isn't that her name? Yar. Lieutenant Yar. That's her name.
Yeah.
Of TNG.
Uh-huh.
Is, I think she's TNG. Yeah, she is Bing Crosby's granddaughter.
Right. Yes.
Denise Crosby.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And then Rosemary Clooney's son.
Yar.
Right.
Yeah.
Rosemary Clooney's son is Miguel Ferrer.
Right.
Who, if you look him up, you'd be like, right, of course, him. And he's in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. So, hey, double search.
Right.
That's
and, then her her nephew is George.
Right.
George Clooney.
The last thing I think
who's
we
that?
Have to say, because we've talked a lot about this. Who's George Clooney? the last thing we have to say is that the all the snow was asbestos. Just like in Wizard of Oz.
Oh, God,
no fucking shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were using that shit up until... You know, this is crazy. I'm going to tell this story. I'm not supposed
tell
to
it.
And I'm going to. I don't care. Tell I've it. Told you guys this story. I won't say any names. Long story short, a movie was being made. Quentin Tarantino is the name I'll say. was making this film. And the person who was doing the practical effects for it is someone I know. And he left the film because Quentin was refusing to not use asbestos because he wanted it to look like the old snow from the old movies.
What?
Right. Wow.
Just saying.
Ooh.
It's a big thing.
Ooh.
Anyway, he didn't end up using it. because Uma found out about it. Anyway,
you're using a lot of names for not using names.
I know. I didn't use a lot of names. What if I beep? What if we bleep out? You don't have to do this, Scott. I'll do it. I'm going to bleep out every name that I said, and people are just going to have to deal with that. Okay, so, because that's hot goss, right?
Yeah.
It is hot goss.
Hot tea. Flamin' Hot Tea. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about the whitest of Christmases?
The whitest of Christmases. No, I'm really glad we watched it all together. That was fun, especially as we it'll be post Thanksgiving by the time
people can't complain.
But getting in preparation for the beginning of the holidays and being in the holidays, that was a lovely evening, and so I enjoyed it. And listen, fucking, there's worse things to do than watch Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye and Rosemary Clooney sing songs on a Monday night. Things you could do.
Thanks for doing it with me, y'all. I'm glad we could.
I'll do it with you anytime.
Let's do it together. I loved it. And thanks for humoring me and doing something silly and holiday-ish. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Not at all.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Do we want to get out of here? Do we want to do anything else? Did we do the thing?
I have a couple spotlights.
Some spotlights, Smelly Theater?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
LA Spotlight.
I'll go first. Yeah. I have two. Brittany, friend of the pod, Brittany Wheeler, is in the Pasadena Corral. The Light of Hope Returning concert on Tuesday, December 5th at 7:30. First United Methodist Church in Pasadena. Okay. I got tickets for all three of us. Y'all can join me if you want. It's a really lovely evening. Brittany's got some fucking solos. GiveButter.com/Pasadena-Corral for tickets. Awesome. And then the other one, I just got tickets for this. Freight, The Five Incarnations of Abel Green by Howard Kraft. It's at the Fountain Theater. It's the West Coast premiere. A friend of mine, I don't know if we've talked, I know y'all have met her, Sydney Edwards is in it, and I just wanted to go support her. Plus, this has been getting some good buzz. But it's going through Saturday, December 16th, and you can get tickets at Fountain Theater. That's theaterre.com.
Sydney's in
it? R-E?
Yeah, fuck Sydney's in it.
Okay, we should definitely go.
Let's go.
Yeah. I want to give one shout out to Porters of Hellgate, who are doing All's Well That Ends Well at the Broadwater Theater. Check out portersofhellgate.com or check them out on Instagram or Twitter, Porters of Hellgate. It's gotten some nice buzz, and I've been around as they've been rehearsing and building their set. And 16 people in the black box. It's pretty cool. Like a lot of entrances and exits and running around and stuff like that. But we should do that and get a couple drinks and plunge. They're doing like Friday, Saturday, Sunday matinees, but they're also doing odd nights over the next few weeks. So they have like a Tuesday night show and a Wednesday night show and a Thursday night show. So they're mixing up. So get out there. Get out there on a random night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I am in March, which is a while away, but I don't know when you'll listen to this. In March of 2024, I'm doing three shows at the Shakespeare Youth Festival.
I cannot wait.
We are performing at the Hudson Guild backstage.
Okay.
Which is the really long 99 seat with the poles, but I like it. It's good for hanging, vines around and things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've seen great stuff there.
Oh, I can walk there from my place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We can, y'all can get drinks at Broadwater beforehand or get coffee at the Hudson. Yeah. We are being billed on the marquee under Saw, the parody musical.
Yes.
So it'll be Saw, the parody musical.
Do not mix these up.
Also the Shakespeare Youth Festival. But we're doing Richard II with our high schoolers.
I can't wait.
Which, by the way, the concept, I'm not going to say too much, but we're basically stripping it so far down that it's basically theater cubes and it's going to fucking rule.
Yes.
I can't wait.
These kids are total
love a show with cubes
for this one. Yeah. And it's going to be really
powerful.
And
Richard II is one of my faves.
You're going to love it. I promise you, you're going to love it. It's going to be so good. These kids are so smart, and it's so amazing. And then we're doing Julius Caesar, which I am not directing, but I'm directing Richard.
Always a goodie.
And then I am directing The Tempest.
Oof.
Fuck yeah.
Always a goodie.
And that's our youngest crew. And cute. That one we're making really cute and really meta and really silly, and everyone's going to love it. And it'll be like 75 minutes long and fucking rad.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
I love you guys.
Love you.
Love you back.
Thank you for joining us for Theater Theater. We have 3 episodes left of this season after this. The next 3 episodes.
Yeah, because we got our curtain call too.
Oh, well,
that'll
if you
be
count
a
curtain
shorty
call,
short.
We have 4. That's true. I don't count that as an episode as much as like a gathering of our love.
Yes. Right.
But sure, whatever, however you want to label it, it's fine. but we have 4 episodes left. We have 3 episodes of The Problem Plays, which I think we're doing alone, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe.
Yeah.
Let's talk off mic.
We'll discuss maybe, having a guest. I don't know where we're at on that. And then we will probably cover what plays. Did we decide?
I know. I definitely want to do Winter's Tale.
Yeah.
And I have 2 that I love, but I think I've decided that I'm going to pick Cymbeline.
Sweet.
Okay. What should I do?
I mean, the other one I wanted to pick was Pericles, but you should pick what you want.
We should do Pericles. Those are the 3 we should do. That's okay. A really solid.
That's a good.
3.
That's a good list of the problem ones.
And it's fun because
and I
I've
don't
done,
know Cymbeline or Pericles.
I did Cymbeline
really at
for
all.
6 months, and then I saw Pericles at the Globe in London. But I've never interacted with Winter's Tale once, so this is going to be fun.
Nice. So it'll be a nice mix for all of us.
Yeah.
They did it at the festival 2 years ago, and I did not direct it, but it was incredible.
Pericles.
Winter's Tale.
Oh, okay. Well, good. I'm excited to get into it. It's a blind spot in my Shakespeare.
We'll make
knowledge
that the
for sure.
final one because it'll be deep into winter.
Yeah.
And then we'll do a curtain call where we're going to do a full ranking of our
5 playwrights.
5 playwrights. And then probably a revisit of our new top 10 in case that's changed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then, because mine actually has.
Mine has too.
And then I think we should, you know, throw in a couple other bullshits and
few other bullshits and whatchamacallits.
We'll probably take like a month off or more.
Yeah,
you know, so we'll we'll let you guys know. We miss you.
Yeah, we keep posted.
Do y'all have questions or comments? You can reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram.
Well, that's
Twitter.
Where you take a picture of your gams.
Take a picture of them gams. Yeah. All right, Scott, it's your turn.
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song and our stingers. And our theme song and our stingers are better than your fucking theme song and stingers. Boom. Deal with it.
I do think we need to consider, because Carol and I have been talking.
Yeah.
Carol Churchill did write this episode, so you can go ahead and say your bit. But she won't be writing anymore after this. So.
No, not.
I don't know who. I don't know who we're gonna be calling, but
maybe it's time for Martin McDonagh.
Oh my God! Ooh. No, we would be cursing so much more than we already do. Okay. All right. Maybe though.
Okay. Shall I do it one last time?
Yeah, do it at once.
All right. And finally, to the great award-winning playwright Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill will buy you a beer.
It's true. Subscribe, rate, review. It really does help. We love you guys so much.
Love
you.
Yeah.
Love you.
The Biltmore Garage wants a grand, but we ain't got a grand on hand. And they now got a lock on the door to the gym at PS 84. There's the stock room behind the McCloskey's bar, but Mrs. McCloskey ain't a good scout. And things being how they are, I'm making this up because I haven't done this in so long. The back of the police station is out. So the Biltmore Garage is the spot for the $1,000 we ain't got. Why it's good old reliable Nathan, 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 Detroit. If you're looking for action, his firm is the spot. Even when the heat is on, it's never too hot. Not for good old reliable Nathan, where it's always just a short walk. Oldest established permanent floating crab game in New York. That's a good
show,
right? It's okay. Like that show. All right. Later, everybody.
The theater, the theater. Hang out, Louie!
Theater, theater.